If you remember, we have gone through Daniel 2, we went through Daniel 7, setting up this basis to try to figure out exactly what the mark of the beast is. And it's not always, when we really get into it and start looking at scripture, it's not so much about what is the mark of the beast. It's about understanding the full picture and the scenario that's going to be taking place of not only what the mark is, but who is the beast and what that means for us. And so today, like I said, we stayed solely in Daniel 2. We solely stayed Daniel 7. And today we're going to finally get into Revelation. And we start to piece all of this together. What we've witnessed this year, the last 2-3 years, there's been a lot of turmoil, a lot of things that events that we never thought we would see in our lifetime. You know, we've dealt with COVID, we've dealt with the Ukrainian-Russian war, we've seen an Ethiopian civil war, we've seen supply chain issues, the skyrocketing inflation, we've seen everything from that to a lack of baby formula. So just weird things that are going on around the world. Something that doesn't make sense to us, but we're watching these fundamental shifts in our society and around the world. This isn't isolated to just the United States or just our little individual cities or states, but this is a world issue. And what we're watching is that a lot of this is becoming to the reality that we're not going to go back to the way it was. This is the new normal for us. One thing that always goes along with these changes, for people who are watching the Bible, who read the Bible, who get into prophecy, this always starts spurring ideas and theories and ideologies of what is Bible prophecy, what these things are unfolding and telling to us, specifically the mark of the beast. Because this is one thing that we're told in the Bible we don't want to have any part of. And so as diligent Christians, we try to make sure that we're saying, okay, I don't ever want to be any part of this. Is the mark of the beast in play now? Is this something we're dealing with today? If you get on the internet, it's filled with all kinds of ideas. In the church, if you've been around long enough, there's all kinds of ideas of what the mark of the beast is. And throughout history, there's assumptions that encapsulate many different things, many different ways that this could be taking place. It started way, way back with Social Security numbers. There were people who refused to get Social Security numbers because they thought that was the mark of the beast. Those numbers were trackable. Today, we have ideas like microchips. Every single credit card, it's got the little square of a microchip on it that goes into the reader. And tattoo barcodes. Nanotechnology was a big one. That was the real big one that really started concerning people because it was such microscopic elements that people could put into your body and not even know it. It's gone everything to wearing masks. That's what we've dealt with more recent. And even so, the COVID vaccine itself, that people were implanting something inside of you with the vaccine. Now, part of that goes along with all of the technological advances we have in our world haven't really helped us with this. It has only complicated things because we get into these ideologies of, well, they can do this now. They can actually put a microchip in a vaccine and send it out of a tiny little needle. They can't quite do that yet. It's not something they're capable of to that degree, but we know that we're heading that direction. One of the things that did pop up was COVID vaccine passports. It was something that in order to get back to a normal lifestyle, the government was trying to regulate and make sure that it was safe for everyone. And so they wanted everybody to have, some states wanted to have a passport and make sure that you were up to date on all of your vaccinations. Then the idea was to get back to normal, right? Go back out to restaurants, go to see a movie, go take a cruise and travel abroad. We have many members who traveled abroad this year for the Feast of Tabernacles, and thankfully the restrictions have loosened enough. I don't think it was too difficult for some to get over. In Ocean City this year, we had a couple families that came down from Canada, and they're still, it's questionable whether or not. They basically had to show up to the border and say, this is what we're doing, and it was either a yes or no on the spot. There's no preemptive or pre-checking to allow it. So they drove all the way there. Thankfully, God helped them get across, and they enjoyed the feast in Ocean City with us. But we see all this happening. We see all this unfolding. In the world that we live in, it's all based around making money. So companies jump on board with this really quick. Anything that they think they can capitalize on and make money, make investments, and grow a business, they'll do that. during the end of COVID, we started seeing a whole bunch of things, but there was a Swedish startup company that really got on board with this. And what they started being able to do was create a scannable digital implant of a person's COVID vaccine. So you'd no longer have to carry around a physical paper saying that you were vaccinated. You wouldn't have to carry around on your phone. It was something that they could actually implant in your body itself. Now, this started catching a lot of traction. I'm sitting there as I was listening to him going, do you have any idea what you're doing to me right now? We have these ideas that sometimes this is the path that we're going down when we're talking about being able to buy and sell, being able to do business, and with prophecy of getting that mark of the beast. The thing is this company, it wasn't new. This Swedish company, this wasn't the first time. They'd actually been doing this for years. In their company, they had been doing this to employees so that they could use it to open doors. They could use the printers. If you've ever worked in a business, most of them will have you type in a code so that they know nobody else is printing off of their things. So they just scan their hand, it was them, and they go. They could buy coffee with it, it's cappuccinos, whatever they wanted. So they were already doing this. And this little microchip is about the size of a grain of rice. And as you can see, they put it in the fatty part between the thumb and the forefinger. And so we see these things happening. And we get these ideas of going, okay, maybe this is it. Maybe this is that distinction between the world and God's people. This is the mark of the beast. But we have to be careful when we make these claims, when we begin to speculate and throw out these ideas, because sometimes when we start putting together our own ideas, it doesn't align with what God's doing. He's working down a completely different path. And we're sometimes quick to jump on board and say, this has to be it, when God has a completely different plan. And thankfully, that's why I hit so hard that prophecy is designed to show us when God does finally fulfill something that we go, he's still in control. He's still in control. It's not so that we can be ahead of the game with everybody else. The one thing that we have to remember when we're talking about the mark of the beast and this who the beast is, the big thing to remember is that this isn't going to be something that we can take unknowingly. The mark of the beast involves some type of worship of the beast, some type of worship of idols. So this isn't going to be something that we can do inadvertently. We think about the most recent one is the COVID vaccine, which it comes up. Getting the COVID vaccine now, and then 20 years from now, Christ returning, going up, you committed yourself to the lake of fire because you did this act 20 years ago. Surprise, that's not the way God works. It's never the way he has been engaged with us. It's never been the way he works us through his plan. We're not doomed to the lake of fire for something that we don't know we did wrong. It's always going to be something that is a willing choice. And we're actually going to look at a little bit of that later, of how God actually talks about what people were doing and what he does and how he handles the situation. Because we know as a loving God, as a God who wants all humanity to join his family, he's not going to do something secretly. It's not going to be something that slides in accidentally. This is only exacerbated by all the things that we're seeing in our society. All these changes are disrupting society on a world scale. We're no longer individual states. It is a globalization that has taken place, and we continue to see more and more ripples around the world. Something happens here or something happens over there, everybody's affected. The supply chain has been one of the biggest things that we've seen with that. Just the talking about vehicles, the little microchip, one little chip stalling out all of the car dealerships. I don't know if you've driven past one recently and actually noticed the lots are empty. The car lots are empty. I keep getting letters about every other day. I keep getting phone calls and texts saying, hey, we want to buy your car. We want to buy your car. The supply chain has completely changed, and it's scary at times because this is new for us. And not only is this new, but for us who didn't live in prior to 1962, the Russian-Ukraine war, the threat of nuclear wars, a nuclear weapon being used, this is all new for us. So this can be terrifying. It can be frightening because we haven't ever experienced this. I'll be honest, I never thought we would see two militaries with boots on the ground fighting each other again. With all the technological advances we have, I figured it'd be drone strikes and missiles from 50 miles away. But the reality is, wars can't be fought unless you actually put men on the ground, and that's what we see. And so this is scary for a lot of us because we haven't ever experienced this. And with seeing all of this, knowing our Bible and seeing prophecy, we oftentimes are going, oh, okay, I got to start paying attention. This must be the beginning. We must be getting into tribulation. I can start seeing the formation of the king of the north. Now let me pinpoint all the 10 kings so I can understand exactly what's happening. Is this really the beginning? Is this really the beginning of the tribulation? Are we in the tribulation now? That's what we have to ask ourselves, and don't panic, because that's why we're going through this, because I want us to have a good understanding of how this unfolds and what is going to actually take place. Because as bad as it has been, as bad as COVID became, as bad as the war is right now, this isn't the beginning of the tribulation. God gives us some definitive pieces of information that show us that we're not there yet. We haven't hit that point. Now, he does give us enough information that we feel like we have a privilege. We have some sort of inside scoop that nobody else has. And it's not so that we can pick out things ahead of time. It's so that when it does happen, we can clearly say, all right, this is now happening. We're now in this phase. And that's the way God is what works. As things unfold, he says, I want you to recognize. That's why he always says, watch. Watch, because as things unfold, we can watch and start to pinpoint and say, okay, this is what we're dealing with. This is where we're at. When we really think about it, we're not given any special information. I'm not given any special visions. I've had no dreams. Honestly, I'm just not that important. I'm not. God has a plan. He's working it out, and he's doing what he needs to do to save all of humanity. It's his plan. No matter what happens in the world, his plan's still going to come to fruition. It's still going to happen. But he says, I want you to understand when this is happening, what's going on. I want to give you this information. And so to understand this, I want to start out by going to 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 1. As we look at who the beast is, if you head over there. Now, I know this seems like an odd place because the beast isn't even mentioned here. We don't find that in the context here of what's happening. But unless we go and look at this, we don't see a full picture. We don't have a full understanding of what's going on. And without other parts of the Bible, we can't fully understand what's taking place here. So as I mentioned when we went through Daniel 7 and Daniel 2, all of these things pieced together to make a complete picture, just like here in 2 Thessalonians. And it would be nice if Paul actually gave us the full information, because at one point he tells you, he says, I told you this in the past. So he's talking to literal human beings here. And unfortunately, he doesn't give us everything that he said, all of the exchanges that took place or what he instructed them. But he's filling in pieces, reminding them of something that he already told them. This is 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. I think I have all of them, so if you don't want to flip to every single one of them, I believe I put slides of each one of them. Here in verse 1 it says, Now brethren, concerning the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him, we ask you not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled, either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come. So he gives us enough information here that the teachings about the return of Christ here in Thessalonica, they were dealing with some issue that they believed that Christ had already come, that his return already took place. Now, we know that that's not the case. We know that's not the situation. But even today, there's still people who believe this. It goes as far as there's an ideology that believes that when the Holy Spirit was sent on that first day of Pentecost, that was that return. That was Christ's return. And so there's several different clever arguments that people have about the return of Jesus Christ and how it's already taken place. But we know we're not there yet. We know that what we find in the Bible of how his return is actually going to take place, those events haven't been fulfilled. We haven't seen all of those take place. If you look at verse 3, he says, "Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first. And the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God." And so we just read through about this man of sin, this man of perdition, and that he's setting himself up as God. Not that he leads people to God, but he's putting himself in the place of God, that he's worshipped above God. And now this is critical because what we have here is a human being that comes on the scene and fills this role. This is a man who does this. There's going to be some type of temple in Jerusalem. Again, we don't have specifics of what that is. It could be a little tent for all we know. We don't know if it's going to be this monstrosity of a temple like we've seen in the past. But all we know is that there's going to be some type of temple, that we know there are sacrifices that are going to be made from what we've talked about in the past when we went through the abomination of desolation. We talked about some of those things that had to be stopped. There's a lot of pieces that have to fall into place, but we see this reestablishment of the temple. But he's claiming that he is divine. He claims that he himself is God. This is a man. We think about our world today and go, nobody in their right mind would ever follow this. No Christianity would follow this. Why would anybody follow this around the world? What would push people to do this? For us, this seems really odd, right? This doesn't make sense of why people would view someone as a human being, looks like us, talks like us, walks like us, and be able to say that they have God abilities. They have this power. But when you think about the people that they were dealing with, the apostles that they were working with, this was normal for them. It's thought that the first king of Rome, Romulus, so hundreds of years before the Roman Empire was even established, the first king, they believe that he started this deification, that they, these human beings, could be deities. And then we see in the Roman Empire where a lot of the, not a lot, but all of the Caesars were expected to receive some type of praise and worship. That's what was unique about the Roman Empire. They didn't care who all you worshiped. You just had to also worship the Caesar when you went. You had to praise the Caesar as they were God because they were seen as divine. They had been put down on earth in a leadership position by the gods. When they died, they went back up to the heavens. They became stars. The brighter the star, the more power they had, the more influence they had. And so for them, this wasn't something uncommon or unheard of. This was something they witnessed in society all the time, that people worshiped human beings as gods, these leaders. It doesn't make sense to us because it's not how our leadership functions today. It's not how we view people. And so we understand that God works with people. He guides them and leads them, but the people themselves aren't gods. But we see here that as we draw nearer to the return of Jesus Christ, this model is set back up. There's a human being that has some sort of influence and sway that people believe he is a god. Look at verse 5. It says, "Do you not remember that when I was still with you, I told you these things?" So this is that reminder of, and this information where we're going, I wish he'd fill in all these blanks for us. I wish he would give us all the details. But he's talking to them saying, hey, remember from the past. Remember what all the stuff I've already given to you. Remember all that. And he goes, don't get distracted and don't get caught up in this. And in verse 6, he says, "Now you know what is restraining that he may be revealed in his own time, for the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Only he who now restrains will do so until he is taken out of the way, and then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming." Now we're given a time frame. Now we're given information that we can actually use. We know that this is a human being We know that he is going to sit in the temple as God. He's going to take that place. Those are markers that we're looking for, but we also are given this information here that he's going to be destroyed at Christ's return. It says, the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. So there's our timetable. So we know that this person didn't live 1,000 years ago. He didn't live 100 years ago. He may be living right now. Don't know. I can't tell you that. It's potentially, we could be working through some of these things, and it could be starting to line up, and he could live right now. Maybe not. Maybe it won't happen in my lifetime, but we see this framework. We see this outline of these things falling into place. And without the whole picture of Daniel 2, 7, and Revelation 13, we don't understand who this is. We don't understand how this plays out. If you hit the next one, if you look at verse 9, verse 9 says, the coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan with all power, signs, and lying wonders. All right, so this is where we get into the understanding of how people are so deceived. This isn't just a human being doing this. This person is personally backed by Satan. Direct involvement of Satan doing this. It says he has all powers, signs, and lying wonders. So Satan has direct involvement with this individual coming to this power. And so there are probably miraculous events that are going to take place that people are going, no human being can do this. This has to be something greater than just a physical human being. And that's what gives them this spur to say, this is a God. This isn't just a human being. And that's where this confusion would take place with Christianity. Because these aren't magic tricks. These aren't things. This isn't a street performer who has tricks that all you have to do is know what he's doing and you know how he can do it. These are something that are spiritual. It's a satanic power. And with this, he's able to deceive many people. Verse 10, it says, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. And for this reason, God will send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie, that they may all be condemned who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. If you can hit the next slide when you get a second. So this tells us many are deceived. Many are actually truly deceived. They don't understand what's happening, and they fall into this confusion and this misunderstanding of what it is. But unfortunately, it also tells us that some that follow this aren't deceived. He says some of them aren't deceived. It's some type of self-willed rejection of God, of God's truth, that they fall into. That they decide to do this. There are some people who are going to know that this is wrong and still do it. They still go along with it. And God says, I will send you a strong delusion because of your rejection. Because of their rejection, he says, if you don't want to believe my truth, if you don't want to believe me, he goes, I'm not going to give you any truth. And he actually sends them strong delusion. He says, I'm not going to give you help. And that's where we have to be careful. That's where we have to say, he's now talking about people who understand. That's us. That's us. We understand the truth of what he's doing. And he's giving us these things and saying, you have to be on your toes at all time. You have to watch. You have to be ready. Do not fall victim of this satanic power. So many things are going to be taking place. This example of this man who is able to use Satan as this driving force to give him these powers, that should terrify us. Because we live in a delusionary world. They don't understand what's going on. They're blinded. But for us, this is our opportunity. This is our opportunity now, and we have to hang on to it. We can't let anything go. And so no matter what kind of power this man is going to have, no matter what he's able to do or create, we have to understand that until Jesus Christ returns, that man is not a man of God. That is not a power of righteousness. That is a satanic power. There's going to be some good things that come out from that man. There's going to be some sort of peace and some type of unity. But at the same time, we know there's going to be war. But this person, this man of perdition, this man of sin, is going to be center stage. The world's attention is going to be drawn to him. He's going to have a heavy influence. But he's also going to be destroyed at the return of Jesus Christ. That's when his rule ends. Whatever he does, whatever he's capable of, is squashed in a moment, in a twinkling of an eye. We think about the words that are used for our conversion of changing from this physical state to a spiritual body. All that's going to happen. That's what the world is going to face. Jesus Christ is going to deal with those people quickly. He's going to deal with the war. He's going to deal with the armies. And he's going to establish this new government, a government that the world has never seen. It's a new system. Whatever this beast is, whatever he creates, whatever influences they've had throughout the world, Christ is going to reset all of that. Whether it's economic collapse or military power or political power or a combination of all of them together, we can see all of that piecing together right now. We can see that taking place in the world that we live in right this second. Our world is so closely tied and knit together. I don't think any of us understood what the ramifications were 2 to 3 years ago, what we would be facing, what it would mean for us to deal with COVID, to deal with the supply chain issues still today. And to be honest, realistically, the chances of Russia stopping this war before they actually take control of what they want to, it's not likely. It's not likely. They're going to do what they want, and they're not going to stop until they succeed. That's a harsh reality that we have to deal with. The even harsher reality is the impact that that has. I don't know if you knew, but Ukraine, before all this started happening, they were world producers for wheat, potatoes, corn, these staple items that we all use. And so when you think about that, one, they haven't been able to plant. A lot of their fields have been destroyed from war. So we know it's not going to be on the level that it already has, that they're not going to be able to produce what they've done. And so we start thinking about this. No matter what, we're guaranteed to not have what it was before. It's not going to be equivalent. Now the question is, what are they going to be able to get to? The bigger question is, if Russia gets control of it, where's all that food going to go to? It's going to go to Russia, right? They're not going to share that. Russia doesn't care about what is taking place globally. President Putin doesn't care about the rest of the world. He's not a communist, he's a czarist. An absolute monarchy. They only care about the Russian people. They don't care what the impact is on everybody else. Now say Ukraine is able to hold out. Ukraine's able to fight them off. They're able to defend for a while and keep some of their crops that they've already been able to produce. Where are those crops going to go? It's most likely going to go to themselves. And then those who supplied them guns and planes and drones, you scratch my back, I scratch yours, right? So those nations, those countries, those third world countries, they're not going to see food. What they're going to see is starvation like we've never seen in our lifetime. We know it happens. We know it happens now. But we're going to see this ramped up like we've never experienced. Now, ours may not change too much. I can personally say I have seen some changes. You've probably seen changes. When you go into the grocery store, there are actual empty shelves now where it never used to be an empty slot. So we see this impact. We see the changes that are taking place and the repercussions of this world scale, how close we are actually tied together. Tighter than we've ever been. We start to see the sub-crises that actually develop into major crises. This is what we deal with. This is the world that we live in. And right now, it seems like all we've been doing for the last 3 years is bouncing from one crisis to the next and just dealing with them and trying to survive and trying to get past the next day. We don't know what's coming 100%, but we have to be spiritually grounded. We have to be spiritually prepared. No matter what happens physically, we know that there's a stronger relationship that we can have with God that will help us get through everything. You know, when we look around the world, what's going on in Europe, we've never seen this before. It's been years since Germany has taken any moves, has done anything to get any type of attention. They have kept their heads down, and they've rebuilt, their society, their infrastructure, their wealth. And they said, don't look at us. We're not doing anything. We're not making any trouble. And for years now, almost a century, they've said, we're not involved. But now that's starting to change. They're starting to see that they are having to do something. There's trouble approaching their borders, and they are ramping up. And so for us that sit thousands of miles away, we're going, what is happening? We're in the safety and the confines of our borders, and I'm so very thankful. I've told you many times that I'm very thankful I live in the country that I do, with the laws that we have, the protections that we have, these blessings that God has given to us. But we know it's not going to last forever. We know that these protections will end up slipping as the country falls farther and farther away from any type of relationship with God or any type of biblical morality. He's going to go, you don't get my protection. Now, thankfully, he does promise protection to the church to some degree, but not all of us. He says, some of you will be tested by fire and some of you will be martyrs. But we know that he's still there. We know he never leaves us. He's setting us up for success. Whether he protects us or whether he says, I know you can withstand this, show them who I am. No matter what he puts us into, we're ready for it. And so we have this man of sin. We see what is developing around us, and we see the potential for that. Some world leader coming on the scene saying, wait, stop all this chaos. This war doesn't make sense. People are starving. There's turmoil. Let's get this under control. We can see how people would get on board with that. And then to do some miracles on top of that, that's where the deception is. And because we haven't seen it yet, doesn't mean it won't happen. Now let's hop over to Revelation. I told you we'd get there. If you look at Revelation chapter 13, just remember, all of this that we just read in 2 Thessalonians, it wasn't written yet. Revelation wasn't written until close to the end of the century. But we don't know exactly what all he knew, what all Paul knew when he was writing some of those things, because he did tell me, he did at least say, you know I told you this. So he may have had some understanding of what is happening here. He may have been given the inspiration to see some of these pieces. We just aren't told exactly how much of that he knew. He may actually know more than we thought. He just didn't write about it. Even John here in Revelation, there were things that God said, no, don't write this. We read that about Daniel too. He says, don't write about that. Don't write that down. So we know there's things that God is withholding, and there's a reason for that. But as we go through this, we start to make some assumptions and say, okay, maybe he did have an understanding. Maybe he had an inkling of what this meant. So this is what we find. Revelation 13, verse 1, it says, then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on the horns 10 crowns, and on his head a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard, his feet were like the feet of a bear, his mouth like the mouth of a lion, the dragon. So we see that the dragon's a symbol for Satan. He says, the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. So that kind of gets into this idea again, that this miracle happened, something that shouldn't take place. This would make sense of why people would get on board, say, this isn't just a normal human being. In verse 4, it says, "So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, 'Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?'" So they are doing this. They're doing this, and when they go through this, they're giving this power. They're basically submitting, and they don't know any better. They're being deceived. They're not worshiping Satan directly, but they're watching this man have some type of power, some type of control, and they're worshiping him. And inadvertently, they're worshiping Satan because Satan's the one that's backing him. Whatever this political and military power is that is created, there is some force and there's some sincerity, I guess is it would be a way to put it, because people think that this person is really trying to help. They think that he's trying to help. They think they're making the world better, that they're fixing the world's problems. And it's to a point where they don't think they can do any better than that, because they actually specifically say, "We can't defeat it. Who can defeat this beast?" And so they get on and say, okay, they're doing whatever this influence is that we can't get past this. So let's support this. Let's support this because they're not creating any more chaos. They're trying to level things out. If you hit the next slide, in verse 5 here it says, "And he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies." So this is against the true God that they're saying these things. And blasphemies, "and he was given authority to continue for 42 months. So this person comes into power somewhat quickly and only lasts 42 months, that period of time. And now, when we think about this, it doesn't mean that there isn't this lead-up period where things start falling into place that gives this person this power or sets them into this position of power. It may be years of things lining up so that this person can take control. But what we see is that it really doesn't last all that long. That's a fairly short period of time, is this 42 months. And verse 6 says, "Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven." So this beast representing this most powerful political and military system that we've ever seen. Something that we haven't seen in our lifetimes. This example, this satanic system. Satan is actually backing this system. And it says this man actually sits in the temple, sits in place of God, blasphemes God. He's worshiped like God, and he's doing all these things. And so there's two things here. We're seeing this beast as a man, as an individual, but we're also seeing this beast as a political system. It's a political military system that creates some order to the economy. And because what we have here in Revelation 13, we see the system where in 2 Thessalonians, we see an individual. We see a man of sin, where here it is a system. It is I guess the easiest term, we look at it as a government. That's what we see in our world today. But we see these things are tying into one another. That this is what happens. This is this establishment. We see all of this working together. We looked at Daniel to see that those empires that formed, that built on each other, built on top of each other, lead us to this point where this power can step in, have some authority. Hit the next slide for me. This is where we have this connection with Daniel. We watch this develop historically, but we also know that there's something coming, that there's something greater. I know we spent a ton of time there, but let's look at Daniel just real quick. If you look at Daniel 7 and verse 23, because these beasts match up. This example that we find, the way it is written out, we see such a strong commonality between it that I want to read this real quick, because we see all of this take place. And we know that as they compound on top of each other, starting with the Babylonian Empire, the Persian Empire, the Greeks, They kept drawing one to the next. They kept building on top of it. It wasn't just one and then all of that scrubbed. There are things that they incorporated from the previous empires that develop all the way down through. And we know around 2,500 years later, we're still seeing some of this. It was interesting. We were able to stop at D.C. before the feast started, and we took the kids around D.C. And it's amazing how many Greek and Roman statues are built into the foundations of our country. All of the buildings have some sort of figurines, and they associate so heavily to the Greek and Roman ideology. And I don't remember that. The last time I was there, I was in eighth grade, and I don't remember all of that. But now seeing all of it, and it's amazing of how much this stuff still lingers, and we don't even realize it. Even for our forefathers, of that was just part of the history that was passed down to them. If you hit the next slide. This is Daniel chapter 7. Look at verse 23. He says, "Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all other kingdoms and shall devour the whole earth." This is exactly what we saw that beast in Revelation 13 doing, right? Having control over the entire world. "Devour the whole earth. Trample it, break it in pieces. The 10 horns are 10 kings who shall arise from the kingdoms, from this kingdom. And another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the first ones and shall subdue 3 kings." So this is somebody else. This isn't one of the kings. This is a separate person here. Revelation actually gets to tell us who it is. And I don't know if we'll get there today, but we'll talk about that. Verse 25, it says, "He shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, shall intend to change times and laws. The saints shall be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a times." And so we went through that thoroughly. I said I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I just wanted you to remember, because it's been several weeks now, it's been almost a month since we went through some of those things, of how closely Daniel's prophecies tie into what we find in Revelation. The examples that are given there with that fourth kingdom, and what, even though Daniel wasn't given the specifics, he was told who the first three were, but God never told him who this fourth one was. And some of the imagery that he gives to us shows that it's something terrible, just horrendous. And then when we get to Revelation, we start to read what this kingdom does. We see how this plays in. And so we have this fourth kingdom in Daniel chapter 2. We have the fourth beast of Daniel 7. We have the man of sin, or the man of perdition, in 2 Thessalonians. And then we have the beast in Revelation 13. All tying this together. All showing us how this is going to happen. And it's with the destruction when Jesus Christ returns. All of it's based around when Christ returns. That's the end point of all of them. That's the end point of all. He doesn't give us the beginning times, but he tells us how it ends. And it's with Jesus Christ. It's at his second coming. These, all four of those events end at the same point. And so these verses correspond and help us to see a brighter picture. That 42 months, how long is that? 3.5 years. So that 3.5 years and that 42 months that we see used in different places, this is actually one of the overwhelming majorities that we see from biblical scholars that they agree on, is that 42 months and that 3.5 years, that time, times, and half a times, that is actually what that means. And there isn't much argument there, that is the core understanding of what that time frame is. And so we see all of this taking place. We see all of this tying together, and no matter how much our world gets flipped upside down, or the chaos that we see, the empty shelves, or the turmoil that we see here at home, we are going to see these changes. We're going to see how they affect us. But we know how this is all solved. We know what corrects all of this. And if we're thinking about it, when we really think, is this the tribulation? Are we in the tribulation? We have to think about the reality of what the tribulation is going to look like. Because if this is the tribulation, this is a cakewalk. If we're in that, this is a cakewalk. This is much better than anything we could have ever imagined. And that's how we know that we're not there yet. It's how we know we haven't gotten into this chaos, this turmoil that is going to be this evil. It's easy to say that. We can call this evil because it is supported by Satan. They have the backing of Satan. Now, what I can tell you is I know that every single second that ticks by, we're just a little bit closer. I don't say 100% of things very often, but I can say with 100%, we are, every second, we're a little bit closer. Now, I can't tell you how close, but I know we're closer. And by fitting all these things together, understanding that these systems and this man, they are all intertwined with historically of watching these empires, that there is this resurrection of the Roman Empire at some point, whether we use 42 months or 3.5 years, we see that all of this that is established is going to be destroyed at the return of Jesus Christ. It is him who establishes order, true order. True order, because what this man of sin creates is actually destruction. That's why his military is so strong. It's not just peace. He does create a peace, but there's still fighting that's going on. Not everybody is on board with this. We know this because God says, if I don't send Christ a return, you would destroy yourselves. So that doesn't make sense unless there's war. Doesn't make sense unless there's some disagreements. So we know that everybody isn't on board with this. Go ahead and go back to Revelation 13. So we have those four images from Daniel 7, the lion with the eagle's wings, the bear, the leopard with four wings and four heads, and then that fourth beast, which is called terrible and horrible and teeth of iron, this just nasty beast. I want to reread verse 2. It says, "Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and his great authority." These empires continually build. They continually develop one after the other with qualities from the one that was before, all the way up until the point of whatever we're going to see in the future. And when we see how much that culture has impacted even our world today, as I mentioned, what I've seen in D.C. with our nation's capital, there's an influence here that has never been completely demolished. It's never been completely destroyed. And so there's always these elements, not just of the Roman Empire itself, but all three of those other empires. We see them growing and developing. I'm going to stop there. But before I do, because we're going to get into that other horn that rises, I want to go ahead and read, since we're already here in Revelation 13, I want to read Revelation 13, verses 7 through 10, just so you have an idea of what we're getting into. If you want to, like I said, it's been a month since we've gone over all this. If you want to recap a little bit your notes of Daniel 2 and 7 to remember what we discussed about this little horn. So this is what we're going to get into next. So we've talked about the main beast power. We've talked about the man of sin. Here in Revelation 13, if you look at verse 7, it says, "It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. All who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life, of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience of the faith of the saints." Do you remember back, which is why I said you may want to recap Daniel that we went through. Do you remember how long the saints are going to be persecuted? Anybody remember? How long was that framework that the saints would be persecuted? 3.5 years. 3.5 years. 42 months. We see all of this getting intertwined. Depending on which scripture you look at, it's that same time, that same allotment. But remember that little horn we discussed. And that's what we're going to get into this next section of talking about this little horn and the impact that that has. And like I said, you don't have to because we're going to go through some of it, but it may be a good refresher to look at that again because it just helps all of this tie in together to create one single picture instead of four different sections of scripture.